It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Smith back to throw. Pass time over the middle. Intercepted by Roll again. Antrell to the 20. Needs a block. Pinball down to the 5. Roll call time. Antrell with back-to-back picks.
Manning back to throw. Steps up. Deep ball down the middle of the field.
He's got Cruz. 35, 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants.
Romo drops straight back to throw. Steps up. Gets hit by Canty.
Pass intercepted by Jason Pierre-Paul. To the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, Giants.
There goes Wilson again. Trying to break to the outside. Wilson cuts it back to his right. Needs a block, and Wilson's going to go. He's to the 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants. 97 yards.
Now here are your hosts, John Schmelk and Lance Meadow.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com, 201-939-4513. Or you can go to Twitter and send us your message, comments, or questions to hashtag Giants Chat. We will talk about it for the next hour, hour and a half right here on Giants.com. The Giants, of course, a very, very disappointing loss to the San Diego Chargers. They fall 37-14 out there on the West Coast. They come home, and Lance, I think the best way to start this and the best way to sum things up is to quote the Giants head coach Tom Coughlin. This team had a chance to close their season, to get back to respectability, to show that, heck, this is a better team than what showed up the first six games of the year. Instead, they played exactly like the team that showed up the first six games of the year. Now, there were some differences because the defense, you know, played a lot worse than it has for the rest of the season for the most part, but really, the turnovers, the penalties, the bad defense. This was like at Carolina, home versus Denver, at Dallas, at Kansas City, against Philadelphia.
And the Carolina game, too, even part of the Chicago game where in the first half they were really dismal, especially on defense. So, you know, it's been a very up-and-down campaign. And as you mentioned, John, they resorted back to what I like to call their old tricks, where you had trouble with turnovers, you had trouble with penalties, you had miscues on offense, and you had defensive breakdowns. And all four of those things that I just named were brought to the forefront at times throughout the course of this season, and it's hard to win football games.
And the big difference the last eight games over the course of this winning streak is that the defense had really stepped up and played much better football, but that ended very quickly yesterday. They forced the Chargers to punt on their first drive. Other than the one fumble and recovery by the Giants when Justin Tuck sacked and stripped Phillip Rivers, it was all Chargers all day, and the Giants defense, whether it was Ryan Matthews running the ball, Phillip Rivers throwing to Danny Woodhead, throwing to Keenan Allen, throwing to Antonio Gates, you name it. The Chargers offense pretty much did whatever they wanted, whenever they wanted, all game long.
It wasn't necessarily a surprise how they spread the wealth. Maybe it was a surprise in terms of how good they were in terms of execution, John.
And efficiency, yes.
We were talking about this all week. What did we say the MO of the Chargers offense was? Short, intermediate passes.
Yep.
They don't necessarily go for the big bomb. And that's exactly what the Chargers did. They didn't necessarily get very creative. As you mentioned, they used Danny Woodhead as a runner and a receiver. Keenan Allen was deadly. Antonio Gates. How many times was he open over the middle of the field? The linebackers just were not on the same page. And the secondary players, more often than not, to me, as Carl Banks pointed out on the broadcast, were playing about 5 or 6 yards behind the sticks so that all the receivers needed to do was go to the first down marker, make a catch, and move the chains.
Yeah, Carl made the point against that type of offense. It's very difficult to play zone. So many guys go out, they stop, they find the holes. They're not even trying to hit a guy in motion, just hitting a guy stopped in a spot. And Phillip Rivers is good enough to read that zone defense, find those holes, and really pick it apart. And they weren't aggressive enough in the zone. They weren't playing the sticks like they should. And the Giants' defense, and again, stopping the run even, Lance, something they've been good at so much this year, they struggle. Granted, the Chargers only go 3.6 yards per carry, but that number was brought down a lot by a fourth quarter where all the Chargers were doing were running the ball at the line of scrimmage, and the Giants knew it was coming. They did move the ball, in my opinion, pretty well on the ground throughout the first half of this game. 4.9 yards per carry and half number one for the Chargers.
And Woodhead had 6 yards per carry, and he's one of their most dangerous players. And plus, let's not forget the efficiency on third down, John. 10 of 15. Of those 15 third downs that they faced, 10 of them were for 5 yards or less. And that is because they were so efficient on first and second down. This was the second best team in third down efficiency, coming in at 46%.
All right, so we talked about the defense. That being said, to me, this game comes down in many ways to one simple fact, and it's a fact that's come up time and time again this year. And I'm not putting all this at the feet of this one player, but when you're playing an offense as good as the San Diego Chargers, when you're playing a defense as bad as the San Diego Chargers, you have to take advantage of your opportunities. And Lance, we saw probably 3, 4, 5 different times over the course of this game when Eli Manning had an open wide receiver and he simply failed to throw the ball accurately and hit him in stride. Whether it's the deep pass to Lewis Murphy down the sideline, whether it was the pass behind Victor Cruz on that one crossing route, whether it was the pass slightly behind Ruben Randall on that skinny post that hit his arm and turned into an interception, and there were a couple more. Eli Manning did not throw the football well in a game in which the conditions were fairly ideal. Not a lot of wind, mid-50s. That should be a heck of a environment for the quarterback to throw the ball well. And Eli was not sharp. And he wasn't sharp for the entire game. They had players on the field, and they left him out on the field. Plus, he had 2 interceptions. Could have had a third if that Chargers linebacker would have held on to the ball on the pass where he undercut Victor Cruz. Just a very poor performance by the quarterback. And quite frankly, Lance, we've talked about it. And you and Bob talked about it on the postgame show as well after the game, when you guys did your Q&A when Bob was waiting for Coach's presser. Bears, terrible defense. Eagles, terrible defense for most of the year. They've been better now. Vikings, terrible defense. Raiders, terrible defense. Packers, terrible defense. Cowboys, terrible defense. Redskins, slightly less terrible defense. But all these are 23rd to 32nd in the league in terms of yards allowed on defense. This should have been a dream stretch for this Giants offense. Yet the inconsistencies, the inability to put drives together, the bad throws, the inability to run the ball except for that Cowboy game. Let's be honest. Besides that Cowboy game, you're looking at under 4 yards per carry pretty much every single game. This Giants offense has simply failed this team this year. Up and down, offensive line, quarterback, tight ends, receivers. The list can go on and on. They have not done what they needed to do to get the Giants into the playoffs this year. And bottom line, for this game and the entire season, the offense simply did not do enough to win the football game.
Well, they put a lot of strain on the defense throughout the course of the season. And as you mentioned, John, the San Diego game to me was the perfect combination in terms of elements and bad defense. Like you said, you can't point to the weather as an excuse. There was no wind. It wasn't cold. It was ideal for Eli Manning to throw for 300 yards. It'd be very efficient. And you went up against a very mediocre defense.
That's kind.
At the bottom of the rankings. And it is very kind because a
mediocre
lot of people
kind
within the Chargers organization actually would be honest and say that this is the worst defense they've ever seen.
What did Josh Lewin say to you about the Chargers secondary and cornerbacks before the game?
Exact quote was point blank, they're terrible.
They're terrible. That was his quote. They're terrible.
He did not try to beat around the bush.
And they lost Richard Marshall. They lost one of their starting quarterbacks, and the Giants still couldn't do anything.
And he replaced the guy in Derek Cox, yes, who was as bad as anybody else on that team.
Who was their big free agent acquisition? They did deactivate him. He's been so bad this year.
It's amazing that they just could not solve that defense. And part of it is because of these self-inflicted wounds, John, as you laid out. A lot of the examples that you threw out in which Eli Manning probably makes a more accurate pass, and Eli and guys like Akeem Nicks, Victor Cruz, Ruben Randall, you're hitting them in stride, and then they're going to pick up some yardage after the catch. Instead, they're trying to reach back just to pick up some positive yards. So that really impacted the offense. The Lewis Murphy throw in Eli's defense, and it was underthrown, Murphy still had a very good chance of grabbing that. It went right through his hands.
Should have been that hard. And the bad throw gave the cornerback a chance to insert himself back into the play and disrupt Lewis Murphy trying to catch it. Could Lewis Murphy have come down with it? Sure. But Eli Manning's got to hit him in stride there. It's a touchdown. You could have had your first Lewis Murphy sighting of the year. Some of our fans out there would have been psyched. But
outside
instead,
of that Cowboys touchdown,
it's behind them, and it turns into an incomplete pass. I don't know who or what Eli Manning was throwing the ball to or thinking about on his last interception, where he just floats the ball right to the Chargers cornerback. Not sure what that was all about. And then the throw to Ruben Randall, again, it was behind Randall, but not to put all the blame on Eli Manning. I thought Randall could have done a better job turning back and adjusting to the football. He kind of nonchalanted it a little bit, hit him in the arm, popped into the air, and went right to the Chargers defender. So, again, Eli played poorly, and I think that's your number one target here because of the poor play of the offense. But His receivers also didn't give him a ton of help either. You mentioned the Murphy play and the Randall interception as well.
A combination of multiple factors. That's exactly why this offense has struggled throughout the course of this season. And then when you don't have a consistent running game, you're really playing behind the eight ball and you're playing catch-up. And what happens when they play catch-up, by the way, they have to abandon the run. Because a lot of people I know were reacting to the game yesterday and saying, well, listen, if the passing game is struggling so much, then continue to dictate the tone of the game on the ground. And listen, I would agree with you, but the problem is when you get down 24-0, John, how are you supposed to run the ball consistently?
Can't. You got to make big plays. You got to throw the ball.
They put themselves in that position to be just a one-dimensional offense, and that had been the problem more often than not throughout the course of this season because they have been playing from behind. You can't have a balanced offense, and therefore, you put Eli Manning in a position where he has to throw the ball more than they anticipated, and what happens when the passing attempts go up? The turnovers go up, and that's exactly what returned to the forefront against the San Diego Chargers, and it shouldn't have gotten into that if they didn't dig themselves in such a deep hole.
I should mention one good thing about this game, and Steve in D.C. is on the line, and Steve, this one's for you.
Uh-oh.
Hakeem Nicks, 5 catches on only 7 targets for 135 yards and a 51-yard catch. Now, one of those catches in the fourth quarter, and it was garbage time, I understand that.
The other one's a Hail Mary, too.
He did. And by the way, Eli couldn't even execute the Hail Mary properly and throw the ball into the end zone.
About 5 or 10 yards short.
I know, and he wasn't even throwing it from that far away. But Nicks did catch that deep, I would call it a deep slant in that first half over the middle, which went for about 20, 25 yards, which was a nice play. And I think you saw Nicks play better than he has pretty much all year long.
And he got that big 51-yard catch very early in the game.
Right.
You just wish that the Giants would have been able to capitalize off of great field position, but they obviously took a few steps back after that. I think he was very aggressive going to the ball, very aggressive with his yardage after the catch. So it was a step in the right direction, but it's basically what have you done for me lately type of thing.
And he actually had some separation on some of those plays. Eli didn't have to fit the ball into a really small pocket, though on one play when Nicks ran that deep in cut, it almost got picked off. It hit the cornerback, remember, on the arm. It popped up, and Nicks came down.
Correct.
So that was one of those plays, too, where Eli threw the ball into harm's way. That time, they managed to get away with it.
And it was also a fluky play like that on the opposite side of the ball, Johnny, if you remember, where Danny Woodhead beats out Hosley. And I'm not trying to change the course of this conversation, but
go ahead.
That's another example where a deflection, you're in a position to maybe force a turnover or bat it down, and Woodhead, who's smaller than anybody on the field,
even
is out-hustling you. Correct.
He's tiny.
He is.
I mean, he's
guy.
Like 5'6".
But he plays much bigger than his size.
But, dude, you can't let a 5'6 Danny Woodhead, who's a running back, beat you to a ball if you're a 5'10 corner. Now, Hosey's probably not 5'10 either. He's probably closer to 5'9". But he's still bigger than Woodhead. You can't let Woodhead beat you to the ball there. You can't. You just can't.
And that gets back to maybe the larger point that you could take away from yesterday's game, John. The lack of energy. The lack of desire.
And
you just didn't see it on defense.
And I asked Justin Tuck that straight up after the game. I know you were listening in the locker room, and I said, Justin, was this simply a lack of execution, or was your team missing something out there on the field? And he goes, you know what? I think we were missing something, and I can't explain why, considering everything we had on the line and the importance of the game. But, yeah, I don't think we had everything out there on the field that we normally would. And that, quite frankly, is inexcusable. It's inexcusable. Your season's on the line here, and now it's over. Mathematically eliminated.
And you can't say, oh, well, the Lions fell to the Eagles, so our chances are slim. Listen, you still go out there, and you play football.
Yeah, the Cowboys don't play till the next day. Get a win. Keep playing good football. And to come out with a lack of energy and fervor is just something that I'm sure is very disappointing to Tom Coughlin. And that's why he's saying it's so disappointed in his post-game remarks.
This is uncharted territory, John. And listen, you go back till 2007.
Yep.
I go back 2008. I can't remember the last time where the Giants were out of contention with 3 games to go. They've always at least gone down to the wire.
I mean, last year was probably the closest thing where you kind of knew in week 16 that maybe you know the hopes were a little slim. But, yeah, I mean, this is uncharted territory is right. I mean, I was working the games since back in 03, so I remember when I'm watching the games in studio, working games for FAN, when Eli Manning first got here, you had Kurt Warner, and Eli took over for him. And, you know, that whole thing went sour back in 2004. And that was my first year working the games. And, you know, that was bad, obviously. But you understood it was a growth year. This was a year where the team was trying to win. And to be out of it this early is certainly disappointing to everybody in this organization. Coaches, players, GM, management, ownership, down the line. 201-939-4513. I'm sure there's a lot of disappointed Giant fans out there. So let's get to you on the phones, and we'll start off with Roldy in Bayshore, Long Island. Roldy, what's going on, pal?
Not much. What's going on, John Lance?
Good morning.
Morning. Very disappointing game yesterday. I felt like that game was like a momentum killer. I mean, the first one was, you know, as far as penalties and turnovers, you know, that deep pass that Eli threw to Hakeem Nicks. I felt like we had momentum going, and then all of a sudden we get pushed back. We get an interception. The field goal that the Chargers missed, it was like 7-0, and then because we were offside, you know, they made him do another field goal, and he made the field goal. I felt from that point on, it was just no turning back. And I know, you know, everybody's blaming the receivers and everything. Something has been wrong with Eli Manning this year. It's just, I don't know what it is. I mean, you could see yesterday's game, the throws that he was throwing was just behind receivers. Majority of them were to Randall, Hakeem Nicks. It's hard for them to you know, get a good, you know, feel for the game when the ball is being thrown, you know, behind him. And I know as a receiver, you got to adjust, but
no, he has not been sharp. You're right. He has not been sharp, Roldy.
It's just haven't been, you know, sharp. And, you know, I felt like, you know, you said, you know, it was something missing. I felt like, you know, the defense, it took a toll on the defense yesterday. It just felt, you know, and I know they're not supposed to, the professionals, they get paid to play hard every single game. But I felt like towards the second half, towards the end, I felt like it kind of took a toll on them. Like, you know what, because they've been trying to hold down the whole team this whole season. Usually it's always reverse. It's always the offensive holding down the defense. And the defense is just mediocre throughout the season. But, you know, for moving forward, I would like to see something change next year. And the offensive line, it seems like the left side, like, you know, I'm always talking about Will Beatty. Yesterday was Brewer that had a bad game. It's always that left side of the offensive line that's, you know, making Eli Manning not feel comfortable. Maybe that's the reason why his whole season's been like that, because of that left side of the offense.
I didn't mean to cut you off, Roldy. I was just going to say, I think you just alluded to the big point that you can take away from this season, where the offensive line play is almost starting to get to Eli Manning, that even when he's not pressured, he feels and senses the pressure, so therefore he's rushing throws and he's not on the same page.
The bad offensive line play has caused a domino effect that's affected the quarterback, has in turn affected the wide receivers, and really thrown that entire offensive line out of sync. And you're right, it's a bad job of us, Roldy. We should have mentioned that James Brewer did not exactly distinguish himself last
night. Yeah. And I'm always beating up Will Beatty every single week. And then he had an okay game yesterday. And
he was all right.
Was just like, you know, it was just, you know, but from moving forward, I mean, you know, I can remember going back to the 2008-2009 season. Next year, I want to see a dominant team on this field. I mean, if it wasn't for Plaxico Burress, you know.
Roldy, are you there, pal?
I lost Roldy.
Wow, it sounded like his cell phone just took a big kaput there. Anyway, but I think we understand where Roldy was going with that. Yes, this team since 2008 has not been dominant. And really, I think in the point he was about to bring up, since the Burress nightclub incident, this team has not been a dominant football team. Now, they've had stretches where they've looked dominant. For example, their Super Bowl run in 2011. You take the last regular season game and then their four playoff wins. You put those together, you have five straight, you know, really good games. That's great. But five games is not a season make. And let's go back to last year for a second, Lance. We're talking the first 13 games of this year, and go back, I don't want to count the Packers game last year, so I guess that would make the last six or seven games of last season. This offense has not been good, and I think it's time to take a deeper look at it and say, all right, this offense had been really good for a few years, but it's taken a step back now, and I think in the offseason, we're going to have some serious changes, and I think they're going to begin up front to try to rectify this situation. I think you can have three new interior offensive linemen, except for maybe Kevin Booth. I think the Giants would love to bring him back. I think you're going to have at least one new major contributor at wide receiver. I think you're going to have a new starter once again at tight end. And that's going to give this offense, and I wouldn't be surprised, by the way, if you had another running back splitting carries with either Andre Brown, and we'll see about David Wilson's health. So you could have a good six, maybe seven new starters on offense next year. That wouldn't be a huge surprise to me. And considering how this offense has played the last year and a half, I don't think it's uncalled for. I think it makes sense.
Well, it's an opportunity to step back, reflect, and find ways to tweak the system, because if you have new personnel, John, I think that's a valid reason to change things up. There's no reason to stay put with the same offensive system. I mean, granted, you don't want to revamp everything, but you have to go back to the drawing board at this point, because as you mentioned, it's become a trend. It hasn't become a blimp here and there. It's become a consistent stretch of games where the same things have been repeating themselves over and over again, and that means that now you really have to make changes.
Well, here's the scary thing too, we're not advocating you're changing the offensive coordinator. That's not where I was going with this. Where I'm going with this is that look at the game yesterday. Eli Manning had plays out on the field to make. There were guys open. There were plays to be had. He wasn't executing them. In other cases, the offensive line didn't execute enough to give him time to make the play, or the receivers weren't getting the separation or didn't make good enough plays on the ball. But all this being said, the quarterback has to start playing better like he did a couple years ago. And he needs to take a long, hard look at himself in the offseason and figure out, look, are my mechanics bad? Do I need to change something in my mechanics? Has my head been messed up a little bit by this leaky offensive line? Has it gotten to me? And I think Eli needs to improve in the offseason and get back to the guy that played in 2011, the first half of 2012, because that guy hasn't shown up now for probably about a 20-game stretch. And that's a problem.
As you mentioned, you probably have to go back to the Saints game, I would say. You want to include the Philadelphia game, the last regular season game last season, where they were able to move the ball, but that really wasn't that big of a meaningful game.
And so the Saints was a lot of special teams, too, which is why
true.
I didn't want to include
David
that.
David Wilson gave them favorable field position.
Like we talked about, the last A-plus game they played was the game against the Packers.
Packers, which was week 12 of last season. That was November 25th. They won 38-10.
Okay, so you've had about 16 games then. You've had about I thought it was actually more than that. My mistake. You've had about 16 games now. It's one full season where this offense has not been what it needs to be to win football games.
And that's a big problem.
It's a big problem.
Especially in a down year, let's not forget, in this division. If there was any year that you could possibly run away with this thing and win the division with comfort, it would have been this season, because everybody has played below expectations. And the Giants just really took it a notch even below expectations. It's bad.
201-939-4513. Let's go to the phones. And by the way, Eli Manning contract, I believe, is up after 2014, correct? Look it up. It's either 14 or 15. I think it's up after 14. So the Giants will have to make a decision on him as well in terms of how long they want to extend them, when they want to extend them, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Let's see how quickly our guy, NYG Salary Cap, can have that information on Twitter. I had it on the top of my head yesterday. I looked it up, but in my 3 hours of sleep on the plane back from San Diego, it has flitted away out of my large head.
You came back earlier than expected.
Yeah, we did. We actually landed slightly after 2 o'clock in the morning, so I actually got to go home to the apartment. I got to take a shower. I got to sleep in my own bed, which is always nice.
Absolutely.
I think you can tell I'm a little bit more chipper this morning than you would have expected.
Yes, I was expecting you to, be a little bit more tighter in terms of being chippiness and the meter being high and so forth. Before you get to the Lions, contract goes through 2015.
Free agent. So they have two more years. And you got to decide when. And the Giants will have a lot of cap space next year, so do you extend them then? Try to get some of the bonus money out of the way in a year you have a lot of cap space? Or do you want to use that cap space on other guys? So the Giants can go a couple different ways with Eli.
Or restructure the contract, also give you more flexibility to sign free agents.
But here's the question now. Do you want to maybe wait a little bit to see if he can rebound from this bad 16-game or so stretch?
Well, you have some security with 2 years. I really don't think there's a tremendous amount of urgency. I think you got more pressing players that you need to take care of before you go the route of Eli Manning.
And that's my point. You don't have to make that decision now, so why make it? The same argument we made with Akeem Nicks last year, coming off a less-than-great season, and you said, look, why make this decision now when you can wait to see if he bounces back and has a better year? Now we see this year, he's having a very similar season to what he had last year with the Giants. So I'm not saying that's going to happen with Eli Manning, but why make that decision now and that commitment now if you don't have to?
Well, this is going to be a very interesting three-game stretch, John, because they have a lot of free agents, and there's going to be an opportunity for guys to make statements and build their case as to why they should come back. When I look at the list of free agents, Justin Tuck's probably the one guy to me. He's playing for a contract. And he's proving that he can still have a little more gas in the tank to be productive.
I'd be shocked if he wasn't back next year at this
point. Me too.
He's played so good against the run. I think Pro Football Focus has him ranked as their third best defensive end this year. So he's played some very good football, and I'm very happy because he belongs here, and he should spend this whole career as a Giant.
Well, look, we hate pointing to injuries, but in his case, John, you have to.
He seems healthier this year, no question.
and therefore the production is increased.
201-939-4513. Maurice is in Montclair, New Jersey. What's up, Mo?
Hey, good morning, guys. I think you guys just hit the nail on the head. I think I was going to say, you know, Tuck, speaking about careers, he deserves another shot because at first I didn't think he was playing all that well, but he certainly came along. Like, listen, like yesterday I wasn't even upset when I just seen, you know, just bad football because after, like, I think the second quarter they scored 17 points. And then how about the Danny Woodhead, I think it was a touchdown when you had McBride and you had, Will Hill and, like, someone else all in the same area, but it was like no one's covering the flats. Like when I watch, I'm just, like, disgusted sometimes. You know, we're not looking physical. I want to see us get up on some receivers, jam them up, get some pressure, have Phillip Rivers running, and everything. You know, I didn't see none of that. He seemed pretty comfortable. Who is, like, you know, Ryan Matthews, I guess his name is. We played Adrian Petersons. We played LeSean McCoy's and had great success on stopping him. So to see him run how he ran was amazing, and I think they had a drive where they, like, passed it once and ran it, like, 14 times. I don't know. I just don't know what's up with this team. I was going to also say about the guys playing for contracts because, you know, you guys were talking about contracts. Guys still can make some points on why they want this and why they should stay with the New York Giants, but yesterday it was just bad. Terrell Thomas got beat. You know, they're letting Antonio Gates run free. These are guys that's playmakers. Like, you have to account for them. Like, sometimes it wasn't accounting for guys coming out the backfield. I don't know. I don't want to just point the blame on the scheme or the defensive coordinator, but something's got to change. And sometimes I feel the Giants are too committed to some of these players. Like, to me, if they're not playing well, get rid of them. You know, I like Prince, but, you know, he made mistakes, but I still think he can, you know, he's still growing. So, you know, he gets the benefit of the doubt, but, like, what do you guys think? Like,
well, I think it's easier said than done, Mo, to just get rid of guys. Unfortunately, with the salary cap and the financial lack of flexibility,
we got to replace them.
Yeah, you have to bring in better personnel to fill the void, and sometimes you just don't have the finances to do that. So, you know, they have to at least work with what they've got. I think injuries played a role this season as to why the defense at times has not been consistent, but there's been a lot of bright spots. John Beeson, Will Hill, I think those two guys really re-energized this group. Though they took a huge step back, as you mentioned, against the San Diego Chargers. And part of it, I think, was the lack of aggressiveness more so than the scheme because they weren't challenging guys at the line of scrimmage.
I think it's both, though. I think
they weren't bumping them.
I think the scheme putting them in a zone in the end probably ended up being a mistake. And Carl Banks made that point time and time again over the course of the radio broadcast.
But right. Even if you're in a zone, I still think they could have been more aggressive.
Agreed.
Within their zone.
That's fair. I think that's a fair point.
And right, like, going to my last point, going towards, like, the tight end, I always watch when I watch Giants football, especially when we had Kevin Boss. I used to love him. If it was really nothing covered, and, like, if it was, I mean, they were covering everything, you know, that was, like, Eli's, like, you know, his guy, like, the tight end. Like, you know, Eli loves his receivers, but he always had a tight end that he can just go to. And I like Myers. He seems to me like he's coming along. So I don't know if we want to just can him. I think we should actually bring someone else in to compete. And if he looks better, I guess he can take the job. But, you know, that's all I have for today. Awesome show as always. And I'll just listen to what you guys have to say.
I appreciate it, Mo.
Thanks, Mo.
I know you mentioned earlier in your call, and a couple people on Twitter are mentioning it as well, saying, well, the defensive line didn't get enough pressure, and they left the secondary out to dry for the Giants. But Rivers was getting rid of that ball so quickly with these short passes. I don't think the defensive line Lance had much of a chance to get to the quarterback.
And that's what happened a lot earlier in the season, too, John. They played a lot of quarterbacks. They got rid of the football. So, you know, you take a big risk when you blitz heavily because then if you have four or five guys that are going after Rivers, he gets rid of the ball. Who's going to help rescue the secondary?
Let's go Brandon in Rochester. Brandon, good morning. 201-939-4513. How are you, Brandon?
It's just funny, everything I wanted to talk about, you guys have touched on.
That's all right. Go ahead.
Because I wanted to talk about, you know, the players, the coaches, the GMs, you know, whose fault is it for this, you know, terrible season? Because in my eyes, I think it's a terrible season. You know, we won those five straight, but they were against garbage teams. I think I was always questioning it. I was hoping they could pull through, but after yesterday's loss, I'm feeling like it was a fluke. So I want to talk over the past few years, not just this season.
Sure.
who's got to change. Something's got to change. Either coaches. I don't want to. Is it the players? They're playing bad. Do we have bad players? So is it Jerry Reese's fault that we're not doing good?
Brandon, honestly, I think there's a lot of blame to go around here. And I think, look, I think it does start with the players. And you've seen a lot of plays out there to be made this year. And whether it's the quarterback, you know, throwing a bad pass or not being accurate enough, whether it's the offensive line not giving him enough time to make that play, or a wide receiver not making that play on the ball, or Brandon Myers running the wrong route. You can go up and down the list. It's endless. These guys, David Wilson fumbling at the beginning of the year. They're just not making the plays out there on the field that are out there for them to make. Now, that's obviously on the players. Now, I think it took the coaching staff and the offensive coordinator specifically, maybe, Lance, it took them a little bit longer than they should have to go to that shorter passing game. Maybe it took them a little bit too long to adjust on offense that way. Yeah, you can make that argument, but I understand you want to stick with something that's worked here for 3 or 4 years. So I can get on them too much for that. But I think this is a player execution problem, and I think, Brandon, what changes you're going to see in the offseason are primarily from a personnel basis. There are so many guys that are free agents. So many guys are not going to be back, and I think you're going to see a lot of new players wearing Giant uniforms out there on the field next year.
And then, so because I was going to say, I was going to bring up the whole we haven't dominated. I was thinking before I called in, you know, what do I want to talk about? And I was thinking, when is the last time the Giants were dominated? Dominated somebody else?
2008?
Yeah, when's the last time they dominated the season?
Oh, the season? 2008.
Yeah, besides the Pirates go season, I mean, obviously. But, like, even before that, one season, when's the last time the Giants dominated a whole season?
I mean, you probably have to go back, I mean, an entire season? I mean, you probably have to go back to the early 90s for that. I mean, they did get to the Super Bowl against the Ravens, but that was the year where they started relatively slowly, and, you know, Jim Fossil had to throw and put my cards in the middle of the table speech and all that stuff. So they had a rough patch there, too. But in terms of truly dominant from beginning of the season to end, I mean, in 1993, I think they finished, what, 11-5? Behind the Dallas Cowboys, they had that Emmitt Smith separated shoulder game at the end of the year that knocked them out of first place. They could have had a first round bye that year and had home field advantage. I think that's probably where you would go back for a dominant season, you know, front to back, to be quite honest with you. It's been a while.
And that's your goal, right? Your goal before the season, you want to dominate a team for a whole season. So I just want to leave it with a question. What do we have to do to get to that dominance? And I'll just leave it at that. So.
Thanks, Brandon. Hey, look, I want to go back to a point that he made at the start of his call here for a second, Lance. Here are the quarterbacks the Giants lost to this year. Tony Romo twice. Peyton Manning. Cam Newton. Alex Smith. Michael Vick, a healthy Michael Vick in that first Philly game. Jay Cutler. Phillip Rivers. Here are the quarterbacks the Giants beat this year. Josh Freeman, Matt Barkley, Terrell Pryor, Scott Tolzien, and a terrible, at least so far this year, Robert Griffin III. I mean, I could do the math very quickly. One of us can maybe do it for tomorrow's show. The combined record of the teams the Giants have beaten this year is not good. On the other hand, the teams that they've lost to, way below 500.
Well, the record for the quarterbacks alone, I know, is below 500.
Right. And if you look at the record of the teams that they've lost to, they're all good. So the games the Giants have won this year have come against pretty poor competition. And when they've played a good team, they haven't won. Let's be honest. They haven't beaten a good team yet this year, besides the Philadelphia Eagles. But again, they didn't have their starting quarterback. So when they've played a good team, they've either gotten blown out or they've blown opportunities to win, such as the two Cowboy games and that first Eagles game, or they've had games like the Chiefs, the Broncos, the Panthers, the Chargers, where they've been blown out of the water.
Well, in that second Eagles game, the defense played great. The Eagles only got on that special teams mishap, but they only put 15 points on the board. They settled for 5 field goals. So they haven't had that complete four-quarter performance.
And if Nick Foles is starting that game, I hate to tell you, the Giants probably don't win. Probably don't win. I mean, I don't know that, but they probably don't win.
The Eagles did not plan on putting Matt Barkley in that game. They figured Michael Vick would play the full four quarters.
Well, which seemed pretty foolhardy considering the way he came out there and looked trying to run around with the football. But the bottom line is that they have not gotten the job done against the better teams.
Here's one other thing I want to throw out.
Yeah.
And Brandon was asking, you know, what do they have to do to turn things around and be more consistent, be more dominant. And turnover differential, you can't overlook this season. They have the worst turnover differential in the NFC, which is minus 13 right now, and that includes the Chargers game. Look at the Eagles last season. Worst turnover differential. They got much better protecting the football, as bad as some of their quarterback play has been because of Michael Vick's injuries, and look at how they all of a sudden turn things around where they're at the top of the standing. So that's another way to be a more competitive team. Not necessarily dominant, but be more competitive, be more consistent.
Lance, you cannot be more right. And the entire NFC East is a perfect example of that. The Dallas Cowboys, who traditionally have always been in the minus category in terms of plus-minus, they're way in the plus category this year because their defense has forced a bunch of turnovers. And what was the number one reason the Washington Redskins won the NFC East last year? Fewest turnovers in the entire NFL. This year, I believe they're nearly double digits in the negative column in terms of turnover.
RG3 himself is up compared to last season.
They've been terrible.
Yeah.
And by the way, they've put the stamp on the envelope, by the way.
Oh, absolutely.
It's on the envelope, it's in the mailbox, and it is on its way to the U.S. Postal Service. They have clocked out for the 2014 season. I say they're going for a draft pick, but they don't have a draft pick.
St. Louis is going to gladly take that one.
And boy, the Rams next year, look out. If they can figure out their quarterback situation, get another weapon on offense, the Rams could be a good football team next year. And that NFC West going from the worst division of football for a few years, that division next year is going to be loaded.
It's the deepest division by far. What other division really compares that goes four teams deep?
They don't. 201-939-4513. All right, Steven D.C. is happy about Akeem Nicks, but I'm sure he's not happy about much else. What's up, Steve?
What's happening, guys? Thanks for taking my call. Listen, you got you got to give me one quick second to it, you know, because first of all, I don't know who was confusing me with Ann from D.C., but
who did that?
My man down in Virginia, need to keep my name out your mouth. You're talking real reckless, talking about I got a love affair with another man. Not a homosexual, don't have nothing against
Oh, Steve, he was just joking around, Steve. Relax.
Listen, he should be a fan. I'm a fan. I'm a fan, okay? The only reason I come to Hakeem's defense is because, listen, if you listen to what I said carefully last night, I know people like to pick a lot of things I say, but I acknowledge that, first of all, I said, you know, the offensive line was a lot worse than what I thought, you know, and I also said I wouldn't trade Eli for anything, but the reason I come to Hakeem's defense is because I always feel like he's being singled out when really you guys just made my entire point throughout the whole segment talking about basically as a whole. And I acknowledge that it's probably more about the offensive line, you know, not, you know, giving Eli the time and not him not having the confidence to throw it downfield. So to me, it's just really been hard for me to grade Hakeem given all the other things that's been going on around him for the last 2 years. And that's why his, you know, that we could even say that the same reason Eli has had a down year is the same reason Hakeem had a down year, not only this year, but going back into last year. So I just always kind of felt like, you know, the offense was playing bad as a whole. So it's really kind of, you know, I would come to Eli's defense if he was constantly being singled out, you know, any other offensive players if they were constantly being singled out. But I think we can all agree as a whole, the offense just hasn't played well. And for whatever reason, we continue to do these seven-step drops, which is, to me, is just ridiculous at this point in the, you know, in the season, given the fact that how poorly our offensive line has played. You know, Kevin Gilbride has not made any adjustments. You know, Eli's confidence has clearly been shaken. I don't know if it's, because of the offensive line play or his own play or both of them together, but it just seems like, you know, we made no adjustments throughout the year. And
I don't mean to cut you off, but I think that you have to give them some credit, and we touched on this a little bit earlier in the show, to go to some of those short passes involving the running backs, because that was something that wasn't evident in the first six games. So there hasn't been a great deal of change, but I think there's been the ability to say and step back, you know what, we have to adjust. And they did do that at times this season.
Well, yeah, I would have just liked to seen a little bit more, you know.
And that's fair.
I agree with you, Lance. I mean, we certainly have seen it a little bit more, but clearly not often enough. You know, I just think that, you know, our personnel is just, you know, for whatever reason on our offensive line, just not giving Eli the time that he's been accustomed to having. You know, like I said, we've had a great offensive line for the first 8 years. Eli has been a giant. I mean, perhaps, you know, one of the top four in the league, you know, for years and years. And, you know, unfortunately, he hasn't been able to adjust, you know, with a little bit less time. And so I just want to say this, guys. You know, the main thing that really disturbed me throughout the whole game is just the tempo. I don't understand why we're getting delayed game, you know, calls, you know, and just getting to the offensive line, you know, to the line of scrimmage so late. Just every other, you know, play, it's just like, you know, Kevin Gilbride doesn't have a clue as to what he wants to run. You know, to have, you know, delay of games going into the half, it's just mind-boggling to me. It's just absolutely mind-boggling.
Well, and Steve, in fairness, I don't think you can blame Kevin Gilbride for delay of games. I mean, the quarterback's got to look at the play clock and get the playoff.
Yeah, hey, I don't know whose fault it is. All I know is it needs to change, you know. The tempo is terrible. You know, it's just absolutely terrible. Going back to assessing, you know, the players, it's really hard for me to assess the offensive linemen, too. I mean, obviously, I do agree with, I think it was Rhodey said about Brewer not playing well yesterday as well. But to me, it just seems like when you get up there, you have tempo, and you do things consistently, and you impose, you know, you just run your plays and impose your will upon the defense, I think it just gives the offensive line a little bit more, confidence, you know, and ability to do their jobs as opposed to, you know, just kind of being sporadic with the play calling. But, you know, guys, it is what it is, and we are definitely what our record says we are. So I just wanted to say this moving forward. This is what I'd like to see.
All right, be quick, Steve. Be quick.
Okay. I'm not really looking for a major change in a running back position. I just want to see David Wilson come back healthy, keep Andre Brown, and perhaps keep Hillis. But clearly, we need to address the linebacker situation. I'm not a Jaquan Williams fan. I like to see us keep Beeson at the right contract amount. But I don't think we need a bunch of wholesale changes in the defense. So it's just a matter of getting that offense together. Maybe one other receiver. I don't know what we're going to do with Hakeem, but like I was saying all year, and I'll just leave it at this, guys. You know, it's just really hard to grade the guy when Eli has not been able to throw the ball down the field effectively to him or anybody else. So, you know, I'm still big blue, true and true. So as long as we beat the Redskins, I'm not going to say much bad the rest of the year. So everybody hang in there, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Unfortunately, I had some notes, but my cable's out due to this little bit of ice.
All right, Steve.
Come in the office. Thanks for taking my
call. All right,
guys.
Steve. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks so much.
And look, Steve, I agree with a lot of what Steve said, but I think the offensive coordinator has made a lot of adjustments, to be honest with you, over the course of the year. I think he's tried to change things up, but I think you're limited in what you can do in a lot of ways. In a game like this, when you get down big, you're limited. When your offensive line can't give Eli Manning the time to take 5-step and 7-step drops, you're limited in what you can do in a lot of ways. When your team can execute a simple screen pass to save their lives, you're limited. And let's be honest, they can't. And I'm not putting that on the offensive coaches.
Well, that's been for years, though. That's not just this season.
Execute a screen. You know, you're very limited in what you can do when you can't do 5 and 7-step drops. You can't run screen passes. You get behind in games. You can't protect your quarterback. It's a problem.
Well, and that gets back to the bigger picture here. And I know there's a lot of people that are watching the Giants this season and they're looking for a scapegoat. I think this was something that Steve was touching on. There is no scapegoat on offense. I know a lot of people are very critical of Eli Manning's play, and that's deservingly right. You know, you can't really make excuses for him at this point. He's having a very down year. But the offensive line has not played well. The receivers have not come through with big plays. The running game has been up and down. Everybody takes blame on offense this season. It's not so simple to say it's just one individual. We highlight individual players each game that have not lived up to expectations. But when you're going to look back at all 16 games, you can say this person contributed, this person contributed, this person contributed. And that's why this offense has not been able to get to a level where you can say, all right, they've played 4 or 5 straight games where, hey, you could take away some positives on offense. You're very hard-pressed to do that this season. You know, they've had a game where they've run the ball effectively, but the passing game hasn't met the running game. They've had a game where maybe they pass protect okay compared to previous games, but they don't run the ball effectively. They haven't met each other halfway in any facets of this team so that you could point to, hey, this is a game where you can build off of. Just hasn't happened this season.
No consistency from week to week. They've never figured out what this team is all about. They haven't gotten that foundation set where this is what we do well and this is what we're going to build off of. We thought they might have been finding that at one point with running the football, play action, power football. But quite frankly, Lance, they never ran the ball well enough to make that their identity. They had one big game against the Cowboys, which they lost, by the way, where they rushed for 200 yards. But otherwise, you know, I'm not getting excited about 33 carries for 98 yards. Even for 106, 107 yards, it's not great. It's under 4 yards a pop.
That's why before they make offseason moves, and I know you were touching on there could be 6 or 7 different starters, they've got to determine what the identity of this team is before they make the personnel change.
What do you want this
Correct.
Team to be?
Do you want to go back to the days, like you mentioned, where you're beating people up on the ground, where you invest in offensive linemen? They brought in Kareem McKenzie. You know, they went the route of free agency that got the running game going. Or do you want to get back to that big play mentality? Which is it?
Well, here's the question. I think this is a fair one. Do you want to be the 2008 Giants and 2007 Giants, or do you want to be the 2011 Giants? Because in a lot of ways, they were very different. The 2007 defense was based, and then even the early 2008 was based around offensive line, running the football, play good defense, get after the quarterback, win football games that way. You won the Super Bowl in 2011. Look, the defense played better end of the year. I get that. But you got there and you won because you're a big play team on offense, and you aired it out, and you went down the field. What do you want to be? And honestly, if it's up to Tom Coughlin, my guess is that they'd much rather be that more balanced team from 2007-2008. Play good defense, get to the quarterback, and win that way. That's my bet. But again, he's not the general manager either. What does Jerry Reese want to do?
And,
all fair questions.
And what works within the budget so that the personnel you bring in can meet the criteria to get back to what you want to do.
Yeah, budget and just available people. I mean, who can you bring in that fits what you want to do? If you want to be that power running game type of team, but there are no mauling offensive linemen at guard you can bring in to become that group, then can you do it? Can Will Beattie and Justin Pugh, two guys that aren't the most physical in the world, but, you know, Pugh's had a very good rookie year, don't get me wrong, but they're not your big 330-pound mauling-type defensive offensive tackles, excuse me. Can you be that power running team when you have those guys there? Who do you bring in a tight end to supplement them as a blocker? Who's your extra offensive lineman off the bench? You know, you have to ask all these things when you figure out what your game plan is for the offseason.
You look back at last season's roster compared to this season's roster, guy like Sean Locklear, I think, was a difference maker. They didn't have that on this year's team, where you have that swing offensive lineman.
And a veteran that Correct. You can rely on.
And then with respect to the tight end spot, you had Martellus Bennett last season. You had Bear Pascoe, which was a nice 1-2 punch. This season, you have 4 guys on this roster. Brandon Myers, the last 3 games, has showed up.
In fairness, you can't count Adrian Robinson. He hasn't played a snap, so you have 3.
That whole position, John, has to be looked at very carefully. I mean, you've got to put it under the microscope and look at the cells and how those things are moving around.
Hey, I said it last week. To me, Lance, the one thing this Giant team needs to address in the draft this year, and I guess free agency, we looked at the free agency tight ends. They weren't that impressive. I want to address the tight end position in the draft. I want to get a two-way tight end that's going to play tight end here, that you're going to sign past this rookie contract, that's going to be here for 8 to 9 years. And I'm not asking for a Jason Witten that's going to be a Hall of Famer, that's going to set all sorts of receiving records. Give me a Howard Cross that's going to be here and be a great blocker and be reliable as a receiver. Give me an Anthony Fasano type. I'd take that. You know, Fasano never caught 60 balls in a year, but you throw it to him, he catches it. He's a good blocker. He's going to catch 40 or 50 balls. That's all I'm asking for.
Delanie Walker, that's another guy I'd throw out there, you know, who could play both sides, can really block well, and could go out and be a threat in the receiving game. That's what you need. It's not really asking for much, but guys in this league who play the tight end position, some of them are just known as solid receivers. In this system, that doesn't work. You need a guy that's going to get dirty at the line of scrimmage.
Of course, that depends, too. If you're going to have the same system on both sides of the ball, that's another decision they're going to have to make in the offseason. Well, Lance, I got to run, get some stuff done in the studio. Can you carry us on the rest of the way?
Absolutely. Well, hey, back to the phone lines. I think that's the best route to go. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. 201-939-4513. You can also use hashtag Giants Chat. Let's go to Ernest in Connecticut. Ernest, what's happening?
Good morning.
Good morning, Ernest. What you got?
I heard what you were saying about Eli. Now, I'm going to ask you a couple of questions. Not that I'm trying to pin you down or anything, but let me ask you this. How much money does Brandon Myers make? How much money does Cruz make? How much money does Hakeem Nakes make? How much money does the quarterbacks make? And how much money do the linemen make? Now you think about that. And how much money does Eli Manning make? Okay, I have seen quarterbacks who have had everybody make excuses for Eli Manning. He has to have a good running game. He has to have a good line. He needs a good tight end. He needs a good this and that. Look at Brady. Brady lost one of his key players, have rookie receivers, and is still that offensive line is clicking. For many years, he never really had a solid back. Peyton Manning, Eli Manning considered himself an elite quarterback. He said it himself. And you mean to tell me everything has to be perfect for him to be a good quarterback? No, I'm going to tell you what the problem is. Eli Manning days is over with. The defenses are getting bigger and quicker. Wide receivers are getting faster, and Eli Manning is not catching up. If you notice, a lot of his passes are behind the receivers. He's either overthrowing the receivers. On Sunday, Eli Manning had plenty of time to throw those passes, and they were not on time. Eli Manning, to my point, he has had his day. He's done good with the thing that he's done, but there needs to be a change. And if Eli wants all of that stuff around him, then what they should do is take some of his – give him a reconstructed contract, spend some money on a better tight end, spend some money on some better linemen and all that stuff. If they don't want to give him the blame and he wants to share it on everybody else, then he should share the money with everybody else, okay? He's paid the big bucks to win and not to make excuses for. Now, there are some changes that I do believe that you touched on, Brandon Myers. I don't think he really has played up to his potential. I believe that, like one of your callers said earlier, I believe that David Wilson should be a starter when he comes back, because I believe he's better than any one of those backs that we have. I think that Tillis would be a better back there. I like Andrew Brown. He's a pretty good back, but I like Tillis because I think he's a much powerful runner. When you have Wilson, who's a much speed runner. On the defensive side, they need to get another defensive end. They need another defensive end. The defensive tackles, I think, are, you know, pretty good or really good. I think they need another defensive end. And they need another play caller. I think that they need to change up on some of the play calling. But I think what it goes down to is Eli Manning. When Eli wins, he gets MVP. But now when he's losing, it's not his fault. He is the captain of that ship, and it falls on him, and he's not living up to it. I don't care what excuse you try to make for him. There's plenty of other quarterbacks. What's his name for the Green Bay Packers?
Aaron Rodgers, you're talking about. Well, Ernest, let me just cut you off here for a second. Number one, I think Eli Manning's faced his fair share of criticism this season. So to say that he has not taken any of the blame on, I think, is a little bit misleading. And you brought up the New England Patriots. Tom Brady's looked pretty good now. But early in the season, those rookie wide receivers were not on the same page with him. And they had their fair share of struggles. If you go back early in the season, they barely beat the Jets on Thursday Night Football. They lost to the Bengals, where the offense couldn't do much of anything. And let's not forget, Rob Gronkowski is now reportedly out for the season because of an ACL and MCL injury. So now let's see truly how New England performs moving forward when you take away his best security blanket and his number one target. Now we're going to really see who separates themselves from the men from the boys. So it's not so easy. When you take away key weapons, when you have key injuries, no matter who the quarterback is, they are going to struggle a little bit. The production's going to come down. I'm not sitting here making excuses for Eli Manning, and you're right. Even though you lose weapons and you have injuries, you need to make up for that, and he hasn't necessarily done that. But when you get hit by the amount of injuries that the Giants have had and the downfall of the production from some of the wide receivers and so forth, it's expected that your quarterback is not going to perform at a very high level.
Well, I don't really think – well, Eli Manning has been with Victor Cruz for I don't know how many years. He's played with He played with Hakeem Nicks. I don't really think it's the receivers. Eli Manning is not putting the ball where it needs to be. He's throwing the ball behind the receivers. I have videotape. I videotape every single game, and I go back and I analyze the game. Eli Manning is not – when he gets under a little bit of pressure, he wings it. When he gets excited, he wings the ball. He throws the ball behind these receivers. And like you were saying earlier, that we can't even throw a simple screen pass. Well, as far as I can remember, we never really could throw a screen pass. So I think that a lot of that falls on the quarterback. Eli Manning is not – there have been – like I said, a lot of those top quarterbacks have not had a running game. Some of them didn't have good offensive linemen, but none of them has been atrocious in interceptions, winging the ball, throwing the ball behind players, can't run a scheme, a screen pass under the same condition. He's not the only quarterback who's been like that. But he considers himself an elite quarterback. He's getting paid elite money. So he should perform like an elite quarterback.
All right, Ernest, appreciate the phone call. There's very few quarterbacks in this league that perform very consistently outside of the elite grouping that everybody tends to throw around. And I find it, you know, quite comical that a few seasons ago, the big topic of discussion in Giants land was about how Eli Manning doesn't get his fair amount of respect and nobody considers him to be an elite quarterback. And now all of a sudden the attention has gone towards Eli Manning doesn't even deserve to be in the conversation of elite quarterback, and perhaps the Giants should change their options. So, you know, when it comes to the NFL, it's all about what have you done for me lately. That's why personally I don't like the elite topic. I think it's absolutely ridiculous. I think quarterbacks should be judged based on results, should be judged on the type of positions they put their respective teams in. I don't care whether you're elite. I don't care whether you're bottom five, middle of the pack. Doesn't matter. Phillip Rivers, you don't consider him an elite quarterback, and he's playing at a very high level this season. The end of the day, whether you're elite or not, is all for the fans. It's not necessarily about the NFL experts and dictates who you pay and what you do with your personnel. Got to perform. And Eli Manning has played below expectations. I'm not going to sit here and deny that. But what I always throw out in the Eli Manning conversation, if you're fed up with Eli Manning, Giants fans, then you need to name me a quarterback that the Giants could bring in that would work under their financial system and be able to come in here and be successful. And I think you're going to be hard-pressed to find an answer. So I think the easiest solution and the hopeful solution is to have Eli Manning go back to the drawing board, change some personnel around him, and get back to the level of play. That's pretty much your only option, given the financial constraints that not just the Giants are dealing with, but everybody in the NFL is dealing with. You're not going to bring in a new quarterback. It's not a realistic option, considering what he's brought to the team and the amount of money that you have tied up in him. So the only other option is to change some of the people around him and have him change his ways, adjust and mold himself as a quarterback. That's going to have to happen this offseason. And you hope that with that, results will increase. It's not going to necessarily be a full 180, but there's no reason why this team can't get back to levels of productivity where you're not scratching your head and wondering what the identity of this offense is. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Let's head back to lines. We got Ed in Houston. Ed, what's happening?
Hey, good morning, if you can call it that. Hey, this morning I looked at the Big Blue Interactive site that Eric Kennedy has, and there were 770 votes on there this morning based on a survey that Eric posted last night as to whether Tom Coughlin should go or should he stay. And it was interesting. Of the 770 votes, 45% said he should go, 55% said he should stay. And you made a comment, I believe it was you, a short time ago, saying they need to decide which way they want to go. It's my understanding, based on what you guys say on this show, that Jerry Reese makes all the decisions, and the coaches are stuck with whatever players he brings in, whether it be the draft or free agency. Maybe it's time for the GM to look at these coaches and say, look, maybe we need to make mutual decisions or at least get feedback from the coaches. Because I think what we see on Sunday is the effect but not the cause. The cause is Jerry Reese. He brings these guys in, and it's up to the coaching staff to figure out what to do with them. But if the pieces don't fit, what can the coaches do?
Well, you're right. It's a very tough challenge. I don't want to make it seem as if the coaches have no input on the system, though, Ed. I think there is a little give and take. There's a lot of scouts that are involved in the process, too. But the way the system is set up is that Jerry Reese makes the top decision at the end of the day and hopes that the coaching staff, like you said, can take these players and fit them into the system. And that's been the issue over the last few seasons. And it hasn't just been this season, where some of the draft picks that Jerry Reese has brought in rounds 3 through 7, and I always say 3 through 7 is important rounds because that's where you don't have guys that make a lot of money and you want to get the most results out of them. And that hasn't come to fruition. And we're starting to see where if you don't have the depth chart going for you and you're plagued by injuries, where are you going to turn if you can't turn to the guys that you pick through rounds 3 through 7? So that has to change. That whole approach has to change. Maybe part of it is the interaction between the coaching staff and the GM, but also I think it falls on the scouts and just looking at talent and determining better who's going to fit into this giant system. Because some of the guys, if you look back the last few years that they've picked in rounds 3 through 7, you know, we look back at these names and we say, where have these guys showed up and what have they done? Adrian Robinson's probably one of them. You know, how much more patience are you going to have with a guy like that? He's taking up a roster spot. If he's not going to produce, then they've got to consider giving that roster spot to somebody else. James Brewer, he's had multiple opportunities. He hasn't necessarily taken full advantage. So that whole thing may have to be revamped or at least tweaked, and they have to go back to the drawing board with respect to the communication between the GM and the coaching staff. It's not just about personnel changes. It's also about front office interaction.
Sure, the players can only do what the players can do, but when you draft a guy like David Wilson, who obviously is not going to be a feature back, and then early in the year we were complaining about his inability to pass protect, yet in college he was never asked to pass protect, and then all of a sudden it's his fault because he can't pass protect. Why can't they utilize a David Wilson like either a Darren Sproles or a Danny Woodhead? Use him on kickoff returns occasionally, maybe half a dozen touches a game, even split him out once in a while as a wide receiver and utilize his speed. They kept trying to use him as a feature back, and it just doesn't look like that's what that guy's made for.
Well, I think part of the rationale behind that, Ed, too, is you drafted him in the first round, and you're not going to basically use a guy that you drafted in the first round for a few kickoff returns and run him out there on third down. So I think part of it is the level in where they took him and hoping to get good use out of him. But I think that they need to look at the running backs and they need to determine how guys balance off one another. I think they have a variety of different personnel. The problem is that they haven't been able to utilize them all at once, Ed, because of injuries. That's been the biggest issue, and David Wilson has hurt himself. So that's going to be something that they're going to have to reevaluate. I think Wilson can be a guy that you could give 15 to 17 carries a game, but then you still need the other running back that's going to be able to handle the short yardage situations, and as you mentioned, Ed, the guy that you could bring in to help pass protect. Just because David Wilson's not a great pass protector doesn't mean that he can't be a featured back in this system. You just need to find how to better balance him off of your other personnel.
Okay, well, thanks for your feedback, and you have a great day.
All right, Ed, appreciate the phone call. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number, 201-939-4513. Keep in mind, you go back to training camp. The plan was David Wilson, Andre Brown. That was the ideal situation for the Giants. Those are the two running backs they're going to use. Those are the two running backs that they're going to balance off one another. What happens? Andre Brown gets hurt in the final preseason game. So David Wilson now has to do all the heavy lifting himself, and that's not how they plan to utilize him. He gets worn down. He gets hurt. And then you went from Brandon Jacobs to Peyton Hillis to Michael Cox. You know, there hasn't been a lot of consistency in the backfield this season because the personnel has been shuffled around. They've utilized so many different starting running backs this season, more so than in any season. It's hard to match what they have had to utilize this year. So, ideally, things work out from a health perspective. Perhaps they could have yielded better results. But listen, we could sit here and we could break down every running back they've utilized and have tried to get some type of positive production out of. It all falls on the offensive line. That's what it comes down to. The offensive line doesn't block consistently. You are going to have a difficult time running the football. And that's what's happened. So it doesn't matter whether this guy can pass protect well or this guy can run a screen play or this guy you could utilize as a wide receiver. Your offensive line doesn't execute. Makes no difference who's running back there. Let's head back to the lines. We go to Michael in the Dominican Republic. Michael, what's happening?
Hey, what's up, man? You said it on the head. You hit it right on the head. That's exactly what I was going to get at. This season has been a tough one to watch. I live down here, and I follow the Giants, of course, online, follow your show online, everything else online, but and also on ESPN. But it's been a rough, rough year. Number one, the offensive line. It starts there. You know, we drafted a whole bunch of guys over the last couple of years to supposedly help out the offensive line. A lot of these guys are no longer even on the team, so I don't know what happened there on those picks. When it comes to the running game, David Wilson, he should be used just like you said, like how they planned on using him. I feel they should have gotten some other running backs in, and you know, despite the situation with Brown's injury, they should have got some other guys in so that they can continue to use Wilson and how they planned. I think they should use Wilson like Detroit uses Reggie Bush. And now with his injury, they shouldn't use him the way they have used him or the way that they're planning on using him. I think they should really limit his carries and not have him run through the trenches and use him on kickoffs. When it comes to Manning had a really tough year. I think he needs to go back and analyze his off-season training and kind of get back to where he was before. The defensive side, they did good. JPP, I think he needs to learn some moves on the line so he can free up and do some more damage. He just seems to just push through people. He doesn't have like any signature moves. He needs to get some moves and with his hands and, you know, spin moves or something because he has the athleticism for it. When it comes to Moore, I think they need to unleash him. And when it comes to the cornerbacks, they need to draft some and get some more guys on board. I'll take your comments off the air. Thanks.
Okay, Michael, thanks for the phone call. And listen, ideally you'd like to get as much value out of your draft picks as humanly possible, but that has not necessarily panned out over the last few seasons. And I'm looking at our Twitter feed, and a number of you are throwing out some other draft picks that they have utilized and haven't really been getting a great deal of production out of him. Saraceno at SJS0816 asks about Eric Herman, who, you know, clearly was a guy that they took in the seventh round. And, you know, they've utilized other offensive linemen who are higher up on the depth chart and have a greater feel for the offense. Herman's not a guy that came in day one and immediately digested the playbook. Now, 14 weeks into the season, you figure, okay, well, why can't you at least have enough confidence in him? But, you know, part of it is they're using some of these guys on the scouting team, and they don't necessarily look at them in year one as impact players. You get a whole other offseason underneath their belt. Perhaps you look at them in a little different light. You know, James Brewer wasn't used right out of the gates, but you expected, okay, year two, year three, things are going to pick up drastically, and that hasn't necessarily happened. You need to get value out of these late picks. And we could go through all of these recent drafts. Maybe pick one or two guys out where you say, wow, they really got good value out of this guy. Outside of that, it's been tough. You know, first, second round, that's one thing. How about the third through the seventh round? Now, that to me is where you make your money because there are so many restrictions with the salary cap in the NFL. You can't go out and spend big money on all free agents and think that's how you're going to round out your roster. You need to round it out with a lot of draft picks. Look at the Kansas City Chiefs, for example, this season. The reason why Kansas City has been able to turn things around is because they've gotten good production out of some of their late draft picks, such as a guy like Justin Houston, who has turned out to be one of the best pass rushers in the NFL. Houston was a third-round pick. And some of the other guys that have made impact have been free agents, but not necessarily guys that they broke open the piggy bank with. And a number of you I've seen making comments on the Twitter feed, you know, the Giants are bargain shoppers. They don't necessarily make the big splash, the big home run through free agency. They do that sometimes, such as when they signed Antrel Roll, and then other times they look to round out their roster with guys on one-year deals or two-year deals and hoping that within the system they can thrive. And I think that was the approach this offseason. And the reason why that was the approach, remember, they didn't have a great deal of financial flexibility. This offseason now, perhaps you change your approach a little. You change your approach because, number one, you had a down year. You also change your approach because you're going to have more financial flexibility. So there's a lot of other factors that are going to come into play this offseason versus last offseason that maybe would give the Giants an opportunity to make better changes and changes that you hope can yield instantaneous results, because this is not a team that's in a rebuilding phase, but this is a team that's in a transitional phase. I think that's the best way to describe this franchise right now. And what I mean by a transitional phase is, number one, as we have hammered home more often than not, decide on your identity. Once you decide on your identity, then you determine, okay, this is how much space we have in the budget, and this is where we want to take the money and utilize it. And that hopefully would get them on a better path so that you come back next offseason and you have some pieces in play that are a good fit for the system that the coordinators can say, you know what, I put this guy in this position, we're going to be a more consistent football team. That hasn't necessarily happened week in and week out this year. Let's head back to the lines. We go to Andrew, who is in New Jersey. Andrew, what's happening?
First, I guess I'm happy with Justin Pugh, but I think everyone on earth knows that I'm right when I said the Giants should have been more aggressive and Jerry Reese and traded up and took one of the elite offensive linemen, the two or three that were offensive tackles that were ranked ahead of him. But then again, you would lose a draft pick. But I think that was really, obviously we all see what a need that was, that they needed improvement, but not just a slight improvement. They really need a solid offensive line. Eli's not really mobile. And also, speaking of that, Hillis, I think they should definitely keep Hillis. He's younger than Brandon Jacobs. Seems like he stays healthy. And the weird thing, speaking of the offensive line, I actually think Hillis should start because the offensive line is shaky. There was a third down play, and then the Giants went for it on fourth and two. I think they completed it to Cruz, but they ran to the right, to Pugh's side. Three guys tackled Andre Brown. But when you have, like, a shaky line, a big guy like Hillis can move the pile. He could punish the defense a little bit himself. You know what I mean? Like, a guy like David Wilson, he needs a better, you know, he's not a big bruising runner, so you need a better offensive line. And this draft, I think they'll focus on the line. And a more radical idea, I'll throw that out about my pick, but I always thought in 2008, after the first Super Bowl, that they should have traded Eli Manning, made David Carr the starting quarterback. They had a great team. They had Chalky, Plexico, all those guys, Toomer. And then this year, maybe they'll draft David Carr's little brother, because he's lighting it up. But I'll put Andrew Sr. on. Sorry about the second example was a little crazier, but the first about the offensive line, you could comment if you still think they should have taken Pugh or traded. Here.
Listen, one thing I'm wondering, now Brandon Jacobs, he's not doing the team any good. Why can't they put him on injured reserve and bring up the guy, that guard that's on the practice squad that they drafted this year?
You're talking about Eric Hermann.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, listen, at this point, putting Brandon Jacobs on IR doesn't really accomplish a lot. They needed Jacobs because they didn't have a great deal of personnel in the backfield. And, you know, as you pointed out, I agree. Jacobs has not been able to stay healthy, and part of that is because they brought him in a little bit later than they anticipated, and his knee hasn't been 100%. It's been a lingering issue, and I don't think that he's going to be an option moving forward, as Andrew Jr. pointed out. But, you know, at this point, I think that they've seen enough with Eric Hermann on the scouting team and on the practice squad where they'll hopefully increase his role in the offseason. You know, you bring him up maybe just to see what he can do in a regular season game, but at this point, it's not going to be a huge
difference. Suppose some other team would grab him. And they can, you know.
I don't think that's going to happen, though, at this point.
Okay.
I don't think you have to be overly concerned about that. That somebody's going to claim him off the practice squad. I'd appreciate
Andrew Jr. here again. I just want to say, too, David Carr, if they would have used him behind a great offensive line, which they had in 2008 and one of the best running games in the league, they could have paid him dramatically less than Eli and signed other players and got picks for Eli. But that's in the past. But thanks for taking the call, and I'm looking forward to hearing your comments.
All right, thank you both to Andrew Jr. and Andrew Sr., and I agree, Andrew Jr., that second thought is a little too radical. I'll leave it at that. That's the kind way to spin that. The Giants should not have traded or even considered moving Eli Manning so that David Carr could be under center. You need a franchise quarterback in this league. The teams that win Super Bowls and get far year in and year out, they've got the franchise quarterbacks. It goes hand in hand. The reason why the Patriots have been very good is because they've had Tom Brady. Packers, Aaron Rodgers. The Saints, Drew Brees. I could sit here, we go over every franchise quarterback. David Carr knows the NFL. He knows how to run an offense, but the level of talent can only take him so far. So that is not something that I think that the Giants organization should have even toyed with. With respect to going in the direction of a different offensive lineman over Justin Pugh, when you look at what Justin Pugh has done this season, and he struggled at the get-go, right at the beginning. And part of that was because they didn't plan on throwing him right into the mix. Remember, Deal gets hurt, and that all of a sudden forced them to move Justin Pugh into a starting job. Initially, they thought, okay, he can watch, learn, get involved in practice, and then slowly, as the season progresses, we'll move him in. Second half of the season, I think Justin Pugh's been very productive. Outside of Kevin Booth, he's probably been one of the best offensive linemen from a consistency standpoint. It's very premature to say that the Giants made a mistake or they should have went this direction with another offensive lineman. Let's see what Pugh does over the next few years, and then you can probably better assess whether or not the Giants made a mistake. But I think he's turned things around to the second half of the season. It'll give him a lot of momentum heading into another full offseason where he better understands the offense. And then, you know, let's see some of the changes they make. Because part of the offensive line play depends on chemistry and who plays next to you. The reason why the right side has been more effective than the left side over the last few weeks is because Deal and Pugh have been next to each other for the last few weeks. What's happened on the left side? Have Beattie and Brewer been next to each other for X amount of games? No. So therefore, you don't see as much consistency. Let's see who comes in, who goes out, and whether or not everybody stays healthy in the offseason so that they go through a stretch of, let's say, four preseason games where the same five offensive linemen are on the field at the same point. And then that carries into week one. That didn't even happen this season, if you recall. James Brewer started against the Cowboys week one. David Boss was banged up. They never had an opportunity to gain any level of consistency. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Back to the lines. Carl is in North Carolina. Carl, welcome to the program. What you got?
Thanks a lot, man. I got three people that I really want to single out on the Giants. And no, it's not Tom Coughlin. He's done great. Jerry Reese. I think he got full of himself after the Super Bowls. I don't see how you can dismiss linebacker altogether. They never addressed it. And they got a retread from Carolina, and he's doing better than anybody else. Kevin Gilbride, I think his system is too complicated. Where somebody can sit down and watch TV and say, they're going to run to the left, and they run to the left. They're going to run to the right, and they run to the right. But when players come here, they say the system's too complicated. That's really off base. And the third one is cornerbacks. We haven't addressed that. Prince Mukamura is all right, but we really don't have anybody else. And, you know, that's basically it. That's where the season went. Also, Eli, I think his best days are behind him. I think he made it to the Super Bowl. He did real good, but he's just not there anymore. And that's about it.
All right, appreciate the phone call, Carl. With respect to the cornerbacks that you just touched on, the problem is injuries in that position. Corey Webster, that was a guy they were banking on playing. Has been on the field. When has Corey Webster made an impact for this team? When was the last time that happened? And he struggled, remember, a great deal last season. So that was one option they were going to turn to. Did not work out. Terrell Thomas, I think, has been a pleasant surprise. Did struggle against San Diego. Phillip Rivers, credit to the Chargers, they went after him because they caught him out of position more often than not. Tremaine McBride's been a pleasant surprise. Guy that's bounced around the league a little bit. He's not necessarily a rookie. I think a lot of people make that mistake. He's been in the league, just has never really caught on with the team. They played their best when McBride was opposite of Mukamura. And he came into a lot of games when guys went down. Jayron Hosley was a player they were anticipating taking the next step. Dealing with a hamstring injury. Plagued by injuries. So, you know, they had options. But the injury bug interrupted those options. I don't know necessarily if they need to make a big splash in the secondary. Between the safeties that they have, you bring back Stevie Brown. I think you have a nice rotation with Roll, Hill, and let's say Stevie Brown. Secondary, assuming the guys stay healthy, and Webster's going to be a free agent, so that's not somebody that they necessarily have to bring back. And I don't know if he's made a strong enough case to even warrant an opportunity to come back. I think the Giants would probably turn to a healthier option. Problem is, you just need the same personnel on the field at the same time, and they did not necessarily have that luxury. But the Giants' defense, remember, turned things around when you got like a guy like Hill back, and you brought in a guy like Beason. Question is, can they keep this nucleus together? They've got the finances to do it, but remember, defense is not just the only issue that they're going to need to address this offseason. Let's go to Ed in Maryland. Ed, what's happening?
Morning, Lance. I have a few comments, but I want to start off by asking you and Giants Nation, do you guys, because you work for the Giants, are you guys forbidden to criticizing the management or the coaching staff? That's number one. And number two, does the management and coaching staff listen to Giants fans, especially after a tough season? Do they have an ear to what the Giants Nation is saying?
Well, I don't know who listens to what, who reads what. This is a big market. I'm sure that they're not that naive. They understand what's being talked about with respect to their team. And, you know, regarding us, you know, the Giants have not put any pressure on any individual to say that they can't talk about this, they can't talk about that. So I think we have a great deal of flexibility to analyze and break down the issues with respect to this team. But, you know, for us to sit here and say, this guy's terrible, this guy stinks, you know, that's not necessarily a productive conversation, because in an ideal world, you can't get rid of these guys left and right. There's financial constraints in the NFL because they have a salary cap. If this was Major League Baseball, Ed, you know, we could spend as much money as we'd like, any team, and you could say, hey, we'll go out and get this guy, get this guy. You got restraints, so therefore it makes things rather complex, and that's tough for any GM, any executive in this league. There are other factors that you need to take into consideration that sometimes tie a team's hands behind its back, and the Giants were in that position this offseason. Fortunately, they have some greater flexibility this offseason.
Right. I mean, I'm happy for the show. It's a great forum for the fans to talk, and most of the fans that call in, they're right on, and so you guys are right on with what needs to be done. My point is, I have a couple points. Jerry Reese has never really been called out for his moves. You know, for most of his tenure, he's done the right thing, made the right moves. It's just now when you're losing, that's when you start to notice, okay, maybe the picks in the lower rounds haven't panned out and this and that. And I've been a real big fan of Reese. One of my questions is about him is that I see most of the GMs in the league, they re-signed their free agents right before they hit the market. And I'm like, and I want to look back on Reese, the only guys he re-signed before free agency was Justin Tuck in the 2007 season and maybe Eli Manning. But I don't think it's a good job by the GM when you have 30, 40 free agents and you don't even talk about keeping any of them, and you try to re-sign all of them right when it's time to hit the market. I don't think that's a good practice, and I just don't know. I think he has his motto is prove it, let them play out that last year of the deal, prove that they're worth the contract. But I don't think that's the right move. I think the best time to re-sign a player is when they're coming off a down year, such as Knicks last year or maybe like a guy like Andre Brown who we've seen had the talent last year but got hurt. Why don't you lock them up prior to them hitting free agency, and that way you don't have to pay them those huge dollars when they do have a good season, and that way you can keep some of those same players in your system.
Well, but Ed, and I don't mean to cut you off, but to play devil's advocate, look at Will Beattie, for example. They gave Beattie a big contract this offseason. Has he necessarily lived up to expectations?
That's a great point. Will Beattie hasn't, but that also comes back to one point about Reese. Like he hasn't really been caught out ever, but it's like now you're seeing his errors. Will Beattie is looking really bad, and you know, so that's a great point that you brought up. But it's still maybe he chooses the wrong players to resign, and some of the good players like he wants to let go. Like I know where Dog and Knicks, like Knicks have a bad year. But, you know, I still think we should keep Knicks, you know, but it just depends what he wants. And so I was saying, you know, maybe off of last year when he had a down season, he was hurt, that would have been a time to re-sign him. But it's not like now they're playing these contract games by, you know, making them seem like this plays a role with the intermediate, so you don't have to pay him that much when it's time to sign him. And, you know, then when you do sign a guy, you sign a guy like Will Beattie and you overpay him. And I just don't know what we're going to do with Beattie. I think going into the draft, you know, since you just signed this year, you have to keep Beattie next year. At least give him a shot to rebound. But you still have a backup plan, and maybe put Pugh, you know, have Pugh go to training camp playing left tackle because Pugh played that in college, and he seems like he has a natural feet to hold down that left side, maybe put Beattie on right tackle. And then as far as Eli, I think with certain coaches and tenures, like, you know, with Mike Holmgren with the Packers, Shanahan with the Broncos, and Coughlin and Eli, it comes a time, I think after 10 years, even though they won two titles, it comes a time where you have to change the system. And we can't keep harping on that we won two titles with Coughlin and Eli. I mean, they were great. I mean, I definitely love those titles. But after 10 years, like, you start to see the play drop off, maybe the coaching style isn't being, responded to by the team well anymore. And so I think after 10 seasons, changes have to be made. And even with Eli, I heard you talk about his contract expiring in 2 years. I really don't think they should, extend him past those 2 years. I mean, they should go along, how they've been doing it, prove it, have a big year, then we'll sign you. Because with Eli, when he goes against Phillip Rivers, now he's 0-3 against Phillip Rivers. He doesn't match up with his contract, and he doesn't match up against other quarterbacks like Phillip Rivers and Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers. He doesn't play as well as them. And so, and I know other fans say this. This is my last point. Other fans like to say keep the same system because we don't want Eli learning a brand new system in his 10th year. Well, if he has only an 82 quarterback rating for his career and has barely doesn't even have a 2-1 ratio TDs to picks, I think that warrants a change. You can't just keep sticking with the same system. I mean, other quarterbacks have learned brand new systems well past the 9th year. Brady's done it, Peyton Manning's done it, Matt Ryan's done it. Eli should not have to stay with the same system just because he's been in the same system for so long. You don't want him to change. Well, the system's not working. So either you change the quarterback or you change the system. I think it's fairly simple.
All right, Ed, appreciate the phone call. And I think that's a valid point. And I think that a lot of you have voiced and echoed what Ed was talking about, where they need to certainly make some tweaks to the system. Let's try to squeeze in one more caller before we wrap up the show. We go to Jay, who's in Washington, D.C. Jay, what's happening?
Hey, Lance, how you doing?
Doing well,
thanks
Jay.
Thanks for taking my call, man. Ironically enough, I was actually the last caller last week, so I think this might be my place now.
There you go.
But I just wanted to touch on some quick points as well. Ed made up a very, very good point about the system, and I do think sometimes, personally, in my opinion, that the Giants are sometimes stubborn in to make these changes. Hey, listen, we've been talking about the red zone offense, special teams. This isn't new. I mean, in my opinion, we've been talking about this for about 7 years now, as far as what's wrong with the special teams, what's wrong with the running game, why can't we get in the red zone? I mean, and these things shouldn't be hard to ignore. I mean, a lot of fans said, if we're able to, freaking pick apart our offense as we're sitting on the TV, I pretty much think that paid professionals can do it as well. And another comment that I wanted to make, I really just think the Giants, they talked a whole lot this year. We're going to win. We're going to guarantee a win. We're going to go 12-0 and all of this. Listen, the Giants are not one of those teams that can talk and respond. The Giants are a team that has to have their back against the wall in order for them to respond. Every time we start to win and we start to get full of ourselves, we wind up ending up putting our foot in our mouth. And that's pretty much, just the story that it's always been. And the Justin Pugh thing, guys, I mean, Giants fans, we've got to kill that, man. Leave Justin Pugh right where he is at right tackle. He's our best offensive lineman. I'm tired of hearing about moving him to guard or tackle. Let him stay right where he is. We need a bookend on our end. Like when we had Kareem McKenzie, he was just that. He was just that bookend, And fortunately enough, I mean, I do think Eli Manning has, his time is coming up. I think Eli Manning is one of the smartest pre-snap quarterbacks, but I think when the snap is hyped, I think his decision-making is a little off at times. But I'm definitely looking forward to see what this offense is going to do next year. I really hope Mr. Mara, Mr. Tisch, everybody, you guys get together and figure this thing out. Like, we need a new system, honestly. So I just appreciate it again, Lance. I didn't want to take up too much time. So thanks again, and go Giants.
No problem, Jay, and appreciate you weighing in, and appreciate all the callers who chimed in, because as a number of you have mentioned, this is the perfect forum for you to voice your opinions and be heard. Two things I just want to piggyback off of before we wrap up the show. Ed brought up Akeem Nicks and the philosophy of Jerry Reese, how he waits till guys wait out their contracts till they all of a sudden have big-time negotiations. I don't think Akeem Nix's value is very high right now, and I think many people would agree with that. So maybe the Giants are in a good position if they do want to bring him back, that he's not going to get a great deal of big money offers. Time will tell. You know, a lot will determine what happens over these last three games, but, you know, outside of this Chargers game, he hasn't necessarily lit up the scoreboard, lit up the box score. So perhaps that helps the Giants' cause if they want to go down the route and say, listen, Akeem, we want to bring you back, but we've got to do it under the finances that will also not restrict us from going out and signing other players. You know, that's a conversation that I think could happen. The other thing that I've been pointing out throughout the course of the show, saying that you need to get good value out of your third through seven round picks, Carl Martinez, who's a very good contributor on Twitter, at the C-Notes, points out, of the Seahawks starting 11 on their defense, eight were drafted in the third round or lower. Look at the Seahawks defense. They didn't break open the piggy bank to get one of the top five defenses in the NFL. They built it around the draft. So think about how much flexibility they have to focus on offense in other areas because they've gotten a good value out of their draft picks. That's why I go back to the drawing board. You got to do your heavy lifting in April and May, in that springtime, when you can step up to the plate and make those draft selections, because that is big difference in terms of being a mediocre team and being a team that's going to compete and have flexibility to go out and spend money. That's where the Giants need to get to. And for those of you who brought up Jerry Reese, you know, that's an area that the front office has to improve about getting good value out of the draft picks. Not necessarily one and two, but rounds three through seven. So that's going to be something that I think could really take this team to the next level. Appreciate all the phone calls, all the interaction. Continue to chime in. Hashtag Giants Chad. You can follow and interact with us at Lance Meadow, one word, last name, M-E-D-O-W, or at Schmelk, S-C-H-M-E-E-L-K. We'll be back, John and I, tomorrow morning, 9:30, for the latest edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Till then, have a good one. We'll see you tomorrow.